And welcome to Behind the Screams. It is me, Lucy, and today I'm joined by the rest of the Cackle crew. We'll start off with Ian, because Lindsay's still on mute. She's composing herself from earlier.
I don't know what's going on. Like, just before we came on air, Lindsay just took, like, a fit. Like, full on. She's still going. Like, she's still going. I'm actually a little concerned about her. I'm a bit concerned about what's going to happen when she unmutes her microphone. But yes, hello. How are you, Lucy?
I'm good. How are you doing?
That's all right. I'm all right. Busy week, as per usual. There is no rest for us anymore.
The grind never stops.
No, indeed it doesn't.
Lindsay, UK hun.
Define K.
I'm a little disappointed, to be honest, that
this
you're
is
okay.
Every woman.
That's why I go for men now.
Can't relate. How you doing?
Living the dream.
How are you? How really?
Are you? No, I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Good. Yeah, we've finally got a little bit of sunshine. Restrictions are starting to ease where we are in Scotland. So hopefully the three of us are actually going to see each other's beautiful faces IRL at some point.
Yeah, behind the screams, meet up.
I know. Whoop. But we're not talking about our listeners, like, actually us.
Oh yeah, just the
we've
hosts.
Not seen each other for
just the hosts.
At least a year and a half.
I know. We'll have to make some pure mental content.
I don't know. I think we're going to be too busy crying with joy that I actually get to see you both.
I'm shocked.
No, I said...
I'm shocked
that
you'd be crying with joy to see me, Lindsay.
I know. I'll, like, cry a little bit, like, oh my god, I get to see you! And then I'll, like, punch you so hard in the arm, like, right where you get your COVID jag for all the mean things you've said to me.
That's fine. I've no heart in my COVID jag, so fuck you! Anyway.
I was going to say, should we get started in the movie? But we need to do our housekeeping. What am I on about? So let's start with our housekeeping. If you enjoy listening to our lovely voices and you want to hear from more of us, you can catch us on pretty much every single social platform there is. We're on Twitter at Screams Behind. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram at Behind the Screams Podcast. Patreon.com/behindthescreams. We have a variety of tiers. Ian, do you want to explain it? Because it has completely left my memory right now.
How many times have you done this now? we have two tiers. We have two tiers. You can either sign up at £1 or £5. And there's a whole variety of perks. If you sign up at the £1 tier, you get early access to the audio to these episodes. You get two bonus exclusive episodes a month. There's a couple other perks in there. If you sign up at the £5 tier, you get four exclusive episodes per month. You also get the video of this episode a month before anyone else does as well. So yeah, there's a whole host of perks. We're going to be recording this month's exclusive review episode, which is going to be on Return to Oz. We're going to be recording that next week, so that's going to be fun.
Ooh, fun times. And we are also on Twitch, twitch.tv/behindthescreamspodcast. You are streaming three times a week and Dave does the Spooky Saturdays. What have you got going on? I know you've just finished Heavy Rain, which I love as well. Did you cringe at the sex scene all over again?
Oh, you know what's actually quite funny? Dave raided me like 3 seconds before that sex scene happened. So everyone just came in and was like, hello! And then on screen was just this really awkward sex scene. I was like, yep, welcome to my chat. You know those memes where it's like watching anime by yourself and it's like something normal, and then watching anime when your parents walk in and it's like two lasses making out and you're just like, that's what it was like. But yeah, Heavy Rain's one of my all-time favorites. It's just an absolute, still holds up as well. I mean, it's 11 years old, it still holds up. Great fucking game. But we've got a whole host of stuff. I'm playing Soma tomorrow night, which I'm really excited for, playing Observer at the weekend. But I've got a few things in the pipeline. Hopefully going to be doing some more sort of talk show style stuff. Currently working on a 1001 horror movies to see before you die series. So I'm currently compiling lists of movies together, and I'm also working on a little horror game show as well for the Twitch channel. So a whole host of stuff coming up there.
Ooh, nice. Well, keep an eye out for that. And Lindsay, you were also on the TikTok for Behind the Screams as well. You've been putting out trivia videos, haven't you?
Yes. Yeah.
That's it. Yes.
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 Oh, I wish I had a more exciting update for you, but I don't.
Well, you can find us on TikTok, though, if you want, for all the fun bits of trivia that we have over there. In terms of our own personal socials, Ian, where can people find you? Because you finally started using your own fucking Twitter page.
I do. I've been using it a little bit more in the last couple of weeks. Nothing too controversial. But if you want to follow me on Twitter, you can follow me at IanForrest12 with two R's.
Nice. And Lindsay, where can people find you?
I'm at @HiIt'sLindsay_ on all social media.
Nice. If you want to find me, you can find me on Twitter and Twitch at @Lulu_Pew, speaking about all the gay things, all the spooky things, just in general, all of the things. I've been playing Dragon Age, been doing like a couple of like cosplay streams as well, done a couple makeup streams, so doing a variety of stuff over there. So yeah, come check it out. It's a fun time. Can watch me thirst over probably every single Dragon Age character in existence. So yeah.
You thirsty? Never.
Never. Today, we are going to be reviewing a little bit of a different movie for us. We haven't done many kid movies. We're doing a kid horror movie today, one of my personal favourites, and it is the 2012 Frankenweenie. And, you know, I like big mutts, and I cannot lie.
I know.
And Frankenweenie's my favourite one.
Wondering where the fuck you were going with that. Jesus Christ.
I needed I tell you what, I spent far too fucking long deciding on a pun for this week because there's too many dog puns out there. So okay, I'll choose that one.
Can I just interrupt you, sorry, before we go any further? Because I have a shout out to do that I kind of forgot to do. What, as everyone knows, one of our biggest supporters is the wonderful Galileo Jones across all the social medias. She is a fantastic supporter of the show. So this is a wee shout out to her son, Sam, who turned 15 last week. So happy birthday to Sam from everyone here at the Behind the Screams podcast. We hope you had a fantastic day. And yeah, big 1-5. Ooh, that's a tough one. Come and speak to me when you hit the big 3-0. I'm twice that kid's age.
I don't say. I remember 15 though. 15 was a fun age.
Sure. It's a good age. Anyways, I just wanted to get that shout out in. So back to Frankenweenie.
Well, we hope you have a fantastic birthday. But yes, we are going to be reviewing the 2012 movie Frankenweenie this week.
Sparky is a great dog, a great friend.
The best dog a kid could have.
When you lose someone you love, they never really leave you. He'll always be in your heart.
I don't want him in my heart. I want him here with me.
The nervous system is just wires and cables. Even after death, the muscles respond to electricity.
Fix that.
I know.
Know what?
Your dog is alive.
You can't tell anyone. Promise?
Promise.
Victor brought an animal back to life.
With lightning and boom and Something big is gonna happen.
Who's responsible for this?
I just wanted my dog back.
we can do better. Bigger.
Rise, Colossus, from your tomb!
Cool.
Victor! Let's go! Hang on!
Mr. Whiskers is trying to tell us something.
Did you get that out of the litter box?
Oh my.
I need your help.
I asked him first!
My problem bigger.
Yeah, he's right.
So Frankenweenie was directed by Tim Burton, and there's a pretty stellar cast for this, to be honest. There's a lot, but I'm just going to give some of the highlights. Charlie Tahan plays Victor Frankenstein. Frank Welker plays Sparky. Winona Ryder plays Elsa Van Helsing. And Catherine O'Hara plays Weird Girl. And the IMDb plot, which is always brief, it's particularly brief this week, is as follows. When a boy's beloved dog passes away suddenly, he attempts to bring the animal back to life through a powerful science experiment. I think it says what it does on the tin pretty much. It's essentially, I think you guys probably be in agreement with me, this is essentially the kids' version of Frankenstein.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Catherine O'Hara also plays the mum, just so...
does she?
Because we
yeah, I think she has three characters.
She has another character as well, yeah. But we absolutely stand for Catherine O'Hara on this podcast. She is an absolute legend. So just wanted to
absolute
shout
queen.
That out there.
So before we get into the movie discussion, Ian, you hadn't seen this movie before. Lindsay, you've seen this, haven't you?
Yeah, I saw it at the cinema when it first came out. Yeah, like this and Paranorman, like both came out at the same time, and I saw both of them at the cinema.
Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, like I don't remember loving it though as much as I did watching it for a second time for this. Like I just remember thinking like, oh, it's all right. But I think I have like a bit of a weird relationship with Tim Burton. Like it's a bit love hate. We'll just leave it there.
I get that because. He is problematic. Like we will just say that to start with. Tim Burton can definitely be problematic.
I think he gets like, just like my opinion, like far too much like hero worship. Like people lose their absolute shit over him, and I'm just like, why? Like a lot of stuff he does is just like remakes and just rehashes the things that he does before. But when I was watching this, I was like, I have to give it to him for. The aesthetic, like everything he does is so aesthetically pleasing, aesthetically gorgeous, and this is like a really good example of that.
I think that's one thing about Tim Burton is that he, you know, when you're watching a movie, you know whether or not you're watching a Tim Burton movie. He obviously had, you know, there's a few directors out there, you know, Tim Burton, obviously, people like Rob Zombie, you know, those sorts of directors have a certain aesthetic, and as soon as you switch on a movie, you can go, that's a Tim Burton film. And this definitely fits in with that aesthetic. And for as problematic as he may be, and I'm sure we'll probably get into it at some point, his aesthetic is very aesthetically pleasing. And I think that probably does go a long way to that sort of hero worship that he gets. Because as soon as you visually see something of his, you like it because you like the way it looks. And a lot. Yeah. And this movie's no different. This movie is aesthetically pretty beautiful, to be honest with you. It's probably, in my opinion, the strongest aspect of this film is how aesthetically pleasing it is. But yeah, I think that probably explains a little bit of that.
So just on that side of things, just taking the aesthetic out of it, what was your first impression of the scene? Because like I said, you'd never seen this before, had you?
No, I hadn't seen this before. Saved it as I usually do for the day before, and then watched it again this afternoon, because I always like to give especially movies that I haven't seen before two watches, because like you were saying, Lindsay, sometimes you can feel a certain way about a first watch in a movie, and then obviously in a second or a third watch you can feel very different. I was really excited that excuse me, sorry, I'm burped. I was really excited that we were getting sort of a kid's introduction to universal monsters, like Frankenstein. There's references to Dracula, there's references to the Mummy, there's references to a whole host of other horror movies in here as well, but specifically things like Dracula, Bride of Frankenstein, obviously there's a massive reference to that in here. So I'm really excited that we were getting those references, you know, and trying to get a younger audience interested in that, because I feel like, everyone knows Dracula and Frankenstein and whatever not, but I feel like they maybe don't know those sorts of universal monster movies, you know, those sort of 20s and 30s and things like that. So I was really, really excited for that. And I kind of felt how Lindsay felt after her first watch, to be honest. I was left just wanting a little bit more, to be honest with you. I don't think this is bad by any stretch of the imagination. Overall, I think it's good. I think it has some issues, but it didn't give me everything that I wanted.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I love this movie. It's probably, in terms of aesthetic, it's probably one of my favorite Tim Burton movies. Kind of, I think with this, it sits really strong alongside things like Corpse Bride and Nightmare Before Christmas. I also saw this in the cinema. This was one of the first movies I saw in 3D. I think it's like one of the first stop motion 3D movies that was released as well. So it was like, it was amazing to see it like that. So I have quite fond memories of it, but I do understand, like, I have watched it quite a few times, but I mean, we will get into it, but I feel like the last like 15-20 minutes, just the end, I have a couple issues with the ending. I feel like the ending doesn't justify the rest of the movie, but we'll get into it. So we'll go through this chronologically. Again, we won't go through scene by scene. This is a relatively short movie as well. I think it's about an hour and 15, maybe an hour and 20. But we'll go through some of the key scenes and kind of what you guys think. So we start off at the family home. This movie is a stop motion movie. It's very reminiscent of things like Corpse Bride. It's also shot in black and white as well, which I think is really nice as well. It's a really nice touch. We don't get many black and white animated movies, let alone live action movies. And start off with the family. So it's Victor and his mum, his dad, and little Sparky, the family dog. And funny enough, they're watching a stop motion movie on the TV as well. I think it's like a nod to old horror movies, B horror movies. I think it's like kind of trying to take reference to Godzilla. What were your guys' thoughts on this first kind of scene and like meeting the family and the kind of the suburban neighborhood?
Like, one of the things I kind of ended up loving about this film is that I do love like Victor and his family setup. Like, as much as Victor's a bit of a weird kid, his parents aren't like trying to push him to like, oh, be more social or do this, do that. They're just like, they're just gonna say it themselves, do you know what, like, maybe he should be socializing, but they recognize that he's happy, so they're quite happy to leave him alone. So I really appreciated that, because I think, like, I'm one of the reasons I kind of love this film on a second watch is, like, over the last few years, like, I've become quite interested in like depictions of characters in children's TV, and I think it's really, really important for kids to see good life lessons and good representation in TV and films, because, you know, for a lot of kids, like, they don't have a happy home life, so TV and stuff is their escape. So if they can't see themselves being represented, like, how are they supposed to learn anything from it? How are they supposed to get those good messages? And this film does have a lot of good messages in it. So how are they supposed to learn those things? Like, they see Victor being a bit of a weird kid. Maybe there's like an autistic kid or something who has poor social skills, who's like, oh, Victor's happy and doesn't really have any friends, and that's like me. And I just think that's really important. So that was something that I appreciated on a second watch.
I'll just say, based on this school, Victor's the normal kid, right?
Oh, I know.
Let's be honest.
I just want to take issue with one thing Lindsay just said, and it's beginning already. The dad is kind of pushy. The dad pushes him towards sports, forces him to play in a baseball game later, you know, sort of brings up the fact that he doesn't have any friends. I think the dad's a bit of a dick, to be honest with you. There's that whole scene where he's like, oh, well, you can't have both. You have to compromise. And it's like, why? Why does he have to compromise? He doesn't like sports. He likes science. Let him fucking do science. Don't force him into the baseball clutch. The fucking father got Sparky killed. It's all the dad's fault.
We don't stand the dad.
Hot takes from Ian Forrest.
Fuck you, fuck you, Martin Short.
I do kind of agree with you there, Ian. For once, I agree with you. I think in this initial scene, it's a nice family setup, but I do have a couple issues with the dad. But I do agree with you in the sense that, you know, even though the parents say, like, oh, Victor has no friends, Victor doesn't portray himself as being, like, really lonely and sad. Like, I think a lot of us can relate to, like, having no friends and being best friends with our pets. I know I was best friends with my family dog growing up, and he's, like, content and happy. And that's, like, a nice thing to see, because not all kids have friends,
you know? The
other
thing as well is, apart from, is it Tokuyashi? Who I have major issues with that character.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Getting started with that. But Tokuyashi and Bob, they're the only two that are really sort of seen as friends. All the other kids don't really have friends either.
No, they don't, really.
So it's not even like Victor not really having friends is like out of the norm, if that makes sense. I hate using norm, but...
What society views as normal, yeah. And then we get this the kind of outdoor scenes just before we get into meeting the arsehole of a neighbor. The neighborhood reminds me, I don't know if it reminds you guys, of Edward Scissorhands. I don't know why. I just kind of, it was like the animated version of that for me, like the suburban kind of streets and stuff.
Very Tim Burton.
Well, yeah, it is Tim Burton, but so, you know, I thought it looked like almost identical, so I thought that was kind of like a nice touch.
I mean, it probably was a bit of a nod, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. Like, he has form for doing these sorts of things, so it probably was intentional.
Ian, you look like you want to say something there about the neighbour.
Oh, don't even get me started on this cunt.
Is he a shark? Like, why does he have so many teeth?
Why is he such a nosy bastard? Like, keep your... Why is he such a curtain twitcher? Like, just keep your fucking, like, business to yourself.
When he had the shears and, like, it pans over the grass and, like, the Frankenstein's grass is a little bit taller than his grass because he's so fucking anally retentive. He's, like, snipping it every day to make sure it's the right, like, length according to the HOA policy.
It's a slightly later. It's the big sort of reanimating scene when he's looking out his window and you obviously see Sparky popping out the attic and he's giving it fucking large and it's like, it's not even affecting you. It's not even affecting you. Like, his complaint before was like, oh, he's pissing on my plants. And then this one, he's proper grumbling out his window and it's like, who gives a fuck?
See, people who moan about other people's pets, like, doing the toilet in their garden and stuff, it's just, like, with a dog, I guess it is a bit different because, like, they should have good recall, you should be able to call them back, and they shouldn't be off the lead, and blah, blah, blah. But, like, people have those complaints about cats. It's like, cats do whatever they want. Like...
Yeah, like, how are you supposed to stop a cat from pissing in someone's garden?
I'll stop my cat from shitting on your flower pits. Not, like, what is wrong with you?
You cannot tell a cat what to do. Thing is, as well, he has a fucking dog himself. Like, he should know. They've got a dog in the back garden, but he's
It's his niece's dog. So, well, yeah. I mean, we are allowed to believe, I think, that don't we find out, like, the parents are out of town, so the dog doesn't normally live there.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
He's definitely set up, he's one of those that sets up a neighbourhood watch and is definitely a Tory.
Just to take it back to a previous conversation as well, this town, despite from the fact that they were all spooky bastards, this town was giving me fucking serious Elvira town vibes, you know, with everyone being all proper, and especially later in the movie. And it's starting to piss me off now. I just hate fucking people so much. Like, go and just let people...
You just hit the question. I've just sentenced it so much.
Just... yeah, exactly. Just let people fucking live their lives. Who gives a fuck if this boy's reanimated his dog? Like, who cares? Who cares? I'm angry about this.
I can tell. The scene that so we're going to jump into the school scene. So they're at elementary school. So I can't remember what Victor's actual age is, but he must be around, what, maybe 10, something along those
lines. Like 10 to 12.
Something I struggled with. I was like, how old is this boy supposed to be?
I went with sort of like 10 to 12, somewhere in that sort of age range.
And we have this science teacher who is the most dramatic thing ever. I didn't even know how to describe him, but I did write in my notes. If this is how my teacher talked about electrons, I might have actually listened in science.
I fucking love this guy. I live for him.
He's great. He also reminds me a little bit of all the references. You know, the critic in Ratatouille? The really tall guy. He's the spoopy bastard version of him. What did you guys... Lindsay, what did you think of the science teacher?
Well, I was kind of like, what fucking Russian, Eastern European stereotype is this guy? But then you realise throughout the film, like, it's kind of the whole point. Like, he is... Like, the way he sounds and the way he looks, he's like... Looks like all these, like, negative, like, Eastern European stereotypes, which then... gives the townspeople the fuel to basically run him out of town, which is the whole point, like, not to, like, judge him, not to judge a book by his cover. But, yeah, he's, like, such a good teacher. He encourages Victor and all the kids to pursue science. And I feel like with the way the parents carry on later on in the film, like, their intelligence or their curiosity and... like, a joy for learning is just not cultivated in this town at all. It's like, you do what we say and that's it. Like, this is what I know and I'm going to impart that to you and there's nothing else you need to know and that's it. And that's, like, a big problem nowadays as well. Like, I can't think of the amount of times it's like, well, I was taught it was this and that in school and there's nothing else. And it's just, like, our generation's grandchildren are going to know things that we wouldn't even begin to comprehend. Does that mean we're going to turn around and call them a bunch of liars? No, like, things change.
We praise them for being better than us.
Exactly.
That, when we get to it, that fucking town hall scene is where my rage is going to peak, by the way. Just pre-warning you guys, that's where my rage is going to peak, okay?
Okay,
so we'll just, everyone turn me off when we get to that discussion. But no, like, Lindsay's absolutely right, you know, like, obviously I've already highlighted Tokuyashi, and we're going to have probably a conversation about how problematic that character is. I feel like this guy's probably just a little bit problematic as well, but I feel like they almost redeem that a little bit by having it be very stereotypical, but then completely flip it 180 by making him the actual sort of moral compass of the movie, you know? I do, and he has some funny lines as well, you know? I like things like, In back home, my janitor wins Nobel Prize, you know, or something like that. So he has some cool lines, and yeah, but I don't know. I'm just there's a few problematic things in this movie.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. I do like him. I understand where you're both coming from at the start. It's very much like an Eastern European stereotype, and you're thinking, oh God, where are they going to take this? But I feel like in the last half, they kind of redeem it. The town hall scene, and also there's the one-to-one scene he has with Victor by the car, and he shows a little bit more of a human side of himself, and he actually speaks, he's quite profound in the way that he speaks about science, and like he's encouraging Victor to be a scientist, and we need more people like you, and to open your eyes, and to, you know, not judge a book by its cover, and just you know learn. So I think they do redeem it a little bit there.
That's his last scene as well, though. I feel like they should have brought him back in somehow, because that's his final scene. That's his final scene.
And yeah, at the end, they were like, oh, we were wrong, and then like brought him back as a teacher at the school, and the last scene was them like really cultivating this love of science.
I feel like that might have just tied everything up a little bit nicer. Yeah. You know, the fact that that's his last scene, we don't see him again in the film. I don't know, it kind of left me a little bit like, oh, I kind of want to see... And he's one of the better characters in the film as well, so I kind of wanted to see more of him.
No, that's fair. And it is a short movie as well, so they're definitely, they could have, and I mean, I know with a kids movie, we aren't expecting a Midsummer that's 2.5 hours, right? But they could have put in like another scene, like another 2 minutes,
I mean,
or 3 minutes.
I just needed a few seconds, to be honest with you. I don't need any more like physical lines from him. I just needed to see him, you know, potentially like, you know, back at the school or something. I don't know.
And then we have so we'll go through the rest of the characters. So we have Edgar as well, who we'll speak about a little bit later. Pain in the arse of a child.
Oh, shit.
For the life of me, I can't remember the other child's name. And then there's
Tokuyashi.
Tokuyashi. But what's the other kid called?
Bob.
Bob. Okay.
The big one is Bob.
The big one is Bob. Big Bob.
Big Bob.
What do we think of this trio? We should probably just get into it just now, because right from the start in that classroom scene, it's quite problematic.
So we're like, Elsa's uncle is like a shark and he's got far too many teeth. This Edgar guy, he's only got 3. It's like, what happened? And I was watching the film and I was like, probably straighten up my shoulders. I do not want to look like this little kid posture.
He's
10 years old and he's got a fucking humpback.
Poor
that's
Edgar.
That's healthcare in the States, guys. Got to be thankful for the NHS and our dental care.
Exactly.
Poor Edgar. It's not his fault he's got a humpback. Just the rest of his fucking personality is his fault. The kid's a lot of shit, honestly.
It's the personality of a hump.
I don't even know what that means.
What does that even mean? I don't even know.
But yeah, I mean, a lot of what happens in this film is kind of down to Edgar and his really shitty behaviour in the middle towards Victor. You know, that whole force blackmailing him into reviving his goldfish. Not even a goldfish he had, just a goldfish he went and bought.
I mean, I wish Victor just had a bit about him and be like, you gotta tell people I brought my dog back from the dead, go ahead then. Like, I would believe him. I'd just
set the dog on him, to be honest. I'd be like, fucking get this prick.
What to do, like, this is why it should have been filmed in Scotland. Edgar would not have been a problem.
There's a funny thing as well, because you know what it reminded me of as well? There's that scene where he's like, speaking to Victor's mum, and he's like, can I have a cookie? And he's like shouting on her, like pretending he's a way to fucking grass her up. And it just reminded me of you going, fucking shut it, you grass, in our Eagle Lake episode.
He has a lot of grass, isn't he?
He is, though.
Yeah,
he is.
Little
shite bag. And the way he crosses his little fingers behind his back, trying to be all sneaky, like, oh, get...
He's up with his hands as well. He's got, like, one little hand, and one the fingers are, like, twice the size. What the fuck is that? That's disgusting.
And then, so we should probably get on to... I'm trying to find his name so I don't butcher it. The other child.
What's Bob.
What's it? No, not Bob. Bob's not that memorable.
Toshiaki.
Character on screen, I was like, I paused it right on IMDb, and I'm like, see if this is a fucking white person, like, because I just found it so offensive, and it's not. Like,
it's an Asian American who plays him.
But I was just like, I'm so offensive, and even the character design as well, like, the character looked evil, and when they're only one of two people of characters of colour, the other one has no lines, like, that's just not good enough. And there's already, I don't think there was the rhetoric at the time, but certainly more now, about how Tim Burton's like, just racist, basically, and never really has people of colour in his film. And then this is one where it's like, oh, we have one who's named with lines, and it's an animated film, they're designed to look evil, and they're also like one of the bad guys. It's just not a good look.
No, and especially in a kid's movie like this, it's not acceptable to begin with, but putting this in a kid's movie and putting these kind of stereotypes in front of kids. I mean, like you say, the body language, the way they just set up Toshiaki, you immediately know that he's going to be a bad character. And also they make it very stereotypical that he has to be this evil genius. And it's just, yeah, Ian, what did you think?
This evil genius is into science and has, you know, that weird speech impediment. And yeah, it's just, why the fuck have we got that? Like, I know it's not like super, super modern, it's 2012, but why the fuck is this here? Like, who okayed this? Like, it's so offensive. I don't understand why this actor even agreed to do this, to be honest with you.
I think that's the unfortunate thing, though, for actors of colour sometimes. Like, even to get the work, they have to take these shitty roles.
They have to play caricatures of themselves.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's not good enough, and I know things are changing at a glacially slow pace, but I hope they change a bit quicker for people of colour, because it's just not right. And I think, like, this is a really good example of why, like, things need to change.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, I echo that. Like, I've nothing really to add to that. Like, I feel like there's just no depth, even if you're going past Toshiaki, there's no depth to any of these other characters that we've got, even Bob. There's a character whose name I don't even know. Like, I don't even know the names of all of these characters. It wasn't until much later in the film that I fucking realized that Elsa was called Elsa. You know, it just feels like there's no depth to a lot of these other characters, and that's very problematic for me anyway.
Elsa is just Manic Pixie Dream Girl. Mm-hmm. Minus the actual love story, because, like you say, like Ian said, like, we barely know her name. But then I'm like, I don't think I could really tell you anything about her. Like, she's the girl next door who's obviously, like, kind of the popular girl, and she looks pretty, and like, that's what the Manic Pixie Dream Girl is.
And then you've got the only other sort of girl in this film who is, again, I don't think she is named. I think she isn't. Didn't you name?
But her character is Weird Girl.
Her character is Weird Girl, and you know, she actually gets more dialogue than Elsa does, I think, in the entire film. And she doesn't. Yeah. She's not really that big a part of the film. Elsa's supposed to be this sort of big part of this movie. She's supposed to be part of the motivation for Victor. Yet, Weird Girl, which gets, you know, a much bigger role. Can we just all agree that Mr. Whiskers is the absolute icon of this movie?
I always get so confused sometimes, because Mr. Whiskers would meow, and then I'd be like, oh, what's that fucking cat want now? Meaning my own cat, which screams at me all the time. And it wasn't even her, it's Mr. Whiskers. They sound exactly the same.
Can I just say that this movie's kind of funny, right? This movie has its moments, it's kind of funny, but that's one of the areas that I think it's just a little bit lacking. I don't think it's funny enough to keep me sort of fully invested all the way through. That fucking scene where she starts pulling out the letters of the cat shit had, like, I was...
I was gonna get onto that, like...
That is fucking vile. What the fuck is she doing carrying around cat shit?
I love the fact, like, there's really good detail in there as well, because you can see hairs and everything stuck in
fuzz. I don't know about you guys, but my cats take colossal shits. There is no way I'm going through that to find letters or omens or anything like that. Like,
but that was just that was just a funny thing, because I thought that was really funny. I thought it was really smart, because, you know, she pulls it out the first time. She's like, it's in the shape of a V. And you're like, yeah, okay, like, that could just be a catch. But then she pulls out a B and a fucking T as well. And you're like, all right, okay.
Oh, it was so bulk.
It is funny, like, the way they go back around the letters, but again, I'm going to say that it was fucking disgusting. Like, if I caught my child doing that... Like, no cat, like, no leaving the house, like, psychiatrist, like, stop playing in the cat's litter tray, like, we need to have a serious conversation.
This just reiterates why children are rather disgusting, right?
Absolutely. Can I just say, before we move on as well, Christopher Lee is in this film, technically. The legendary Christopher Lee, because Victor's mum and dad at one point is having, like, date night and they're watching a spooky movie and it's Christopher Lee in Dracula. And yes. I love that. I absolutely love that. Like, that's such a cool little thing for horror fans, you know, because that's something that kids aren't going to get. Like, you know, how many sort of 12, 13-year-olds are going to watch this movie and be like, that's Christopher Lee from Dracula. But to us, that was put in there for the adults, really. And I really like that. I fucking love Christopher Lee.
I think this movie, what it does do, it's a great love letter to old horror movies and old horror characters. Like, I think this, it's still problematic, and we will talk more about that, and there is definitely issues in this, but I think if you were introducing kids to horror movies, this is a good one to add to the collection when they're really young, you know, because it gets them introduced to characters like Dracula, the story of Frankenstein, you know, there's references to Godzilla, all these kind of references. So I think it's a good starter movie. One thing I know this is jumping forward, but I have to talk about this whilst I remember. Mr. Whiskers obviously carries this movie, right? There's the scene near the end where Mr. Whiskers gets electrocuted and turns into this like bat cat creature, and I have to say it kind of reminded me of Ripley, just this cute little demon.
So for those who don't know, if you're new to this podcast, Ripley is my cat, and she is the spawn of Satan himself. I got proper Ripley vibe. That's what she's like. She's evil. She's probably in the other room plotting my downfall as we speak, so yeah, definitely.
So stinking cute, but when the cat just turns to black and has this little menacing face, I could not stop laughing. I was like, oh, that's Ripley. That is 100% Ripley.
Definitely. Speaking of cats, I think your one's just popped in. Popped in there, Lucy.
Pebbles is like, hello? Yeah. Can you say hello? Yes, hello.
There we go.
But we'll jump forward a little bit. So, yes, I know. We get this scene at the dinner table, right? And this is where the dad becomes a bit of an arsehole. First of all, before we get into that, they talk about the dad's job, and the dad's a travel agent, and he comes out with the cheesiest fucking line. He says, "I sell dreams." That's a Ryanair ad right there, mate. Like,
that's a party political slogan, that, isn't it? Like, you're going around people's doors and being like, "Yes, we sell dreams." Fuck off, you dick.
And the dad is pretty kind of pushing Victor, because Victor wants to do the science fair and he's really involved in science, and the dad's like, you know, you should put yourself out there, do sports, you know, make some friends, and he's really pushing him to start baseball. And I don't know about you guys, but I was kind of like, they could have used this as a good example of, like, you know, an Addams Family, where they like value their kids being who they are, and like that could have been a really nice message,
right? But I totally understand wanting your friends, your family and things to go and try new things, and, you know, to broaden their horizons and, you know, step outside their comfort zones a little bit. But I mean, it's not, I would understand it more if Victor wasn't doing anything sort of constructive with his time, but he was learning science. He was being scientific. He was still learning things. I just don't, and he was good at it. Clearly, he was very good at it. So, like, that's what bugged me more about it. It wasn't so much that he was like, do you want to try baseball? Like, if he just says, oh, do you want to do baseball? Like, I would quite like it if you tried baseball. Fine, whatever. But you're taking him away from doing something ultimately that's very productive for a game, for a pretty much pointless game.
Yeah. Lindsay, what did you think about this scene?
Yeah, I kind of agree. Like, kind of like yes and no. Like, I do think sometimes, like, I think about when I was younger and I used to do dancing, and I remember I ended up giving it up because my ankles were just in agony all the time. Like, I wasn't entirely sure why. But I love dancing. And instead of my mum being like, oh, why don't we try and fix the problem? She was just like, okay. And then it's something as an adult, like, I kind of regret. But as a child, I didn't really have that understanding to know that I might regret it. So I kind of wish I maybe had someone to give me a guiding hand and be like, actually, maybe don't stop doing this, because, like, there could be a solution to it. So I do kind of understand Victor's dad kind of maybe being more than a bit like pushy about it, because Victor's just straight up saying like no, and it's like, but you might like it, like how do you know if you don't try? And I do think that is kind of a parent's job in a way. Like, baseball is sport at the end of the day, like it's really important to exercise because it gives you like healthy heart, healthy muscles and stuff. Like, it's social, which would be good for him because he doesn't have any friends. So I can kind of see it from like both sides, because like even as a child, like you do kind of have to learn that you need to push yourself sometimes to do things, and if you just kind of like sit in that comfortable space, then you don't really grow. So I can kind of see it from both sides.
No, that's fair. I suppose it's a balancing act. You want to not push your kid. You want to encourage them to go outside their comfort zone. But so there is a balance of pushing and then just encouraging. So maybe he just missed the mark a little bit. But Victor does get involved, and they have a baseball game. I think it's the next day. We're not sure about time frames of time jumps or anything like that. But the family's there, Sparky's there. And then we get this really sad scene. So they hit the ball kind of out the play field.
Lucy, what? You don't do sports, do you?
Me? Oh yeah, I've made.
They hit the ball over there. I think the first thing. He hits a home run.
Okay.
Jesus Christ, Lucy!
All right, calm me out.
I didn't think it was going to be that bad.
I'm book smart. I'm not street smart.
Just the way don't you said question that, book though. Smart. You're like, oh, way over there.
Oh, way over there. I know, if you can't see. Okay. Fuck's sake. the ball gets thrown away, okay? Into like a car park or whatever, some shite. And then obviously Sparky being the dog is like, oh, let's go chase the ball. And then the poor wee dog gets run over and dies. It's really sad.
This scene got me so much because it was just like, obviously it sucks having a pet die, but then I was just like thinking about poor Victor, like seeing it happen and being that child and how like awful that must be. I was just, oh, made me want to cry.
This scene definitely got me. I obviously, you guys know that I had been kind of faced with the prospect of one of my pets' sort of mortality in the past few weeks, so yeah, the scene definitely got me. I was feeling a little bit raw about this one. Luckily, little Arnold is still kicking, so it's all good.
Little Arnie's a strong boy. But yeah, this also kind of hit me in the heart. I mean, like, it'd be very traumatic to see that as an adult, let alone as a kid. But like, I think I can kind of speak for all of us that when we see somebody on screen dying, we're kind of like, eh, whatever. If you touch a hair on a little animal's head, I'm going to start greeting. You need to get the tissues ready because, I can't deal with
animals. I mean, I was rooting for all the pets at the end of this film. I don't know about you guys.
Oh, yeah. For sure. So we have that scene. So Sparky is no longer... And then we have a like compilation scenes of Victor being really sad, and they, you know, they have the pet cemetery, and they have the burial for Sparky. And then we have this scene back in the science class. I don't think I've ever seen this in any school. We've seen frog dissections, but not frogs getting fucking electrocuted. But it sparks an idea, not pun intended, but it sparks an idea in Victor thinking, oh, is this something I could I do with the dog? What did you guys think of this? Because when I saw that, I was like, they do that in school?
Like, there's obviously that? This is where we're obviously about to start taking some leaps. And you know, because you know, it's the story of Frankenstein. We're taking leaps anyway. We're horror fans. We take massive leaps all the time. So yeah, I didn't really have that big an issue with him doing the electricity to the frog in class. I just put it down to this sort of town being slightly different, this world being slightly different. So I didn't really have any sort of emotional reaction to that.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's not something we kind of haven't seen before in depictions of American middle school, high school, because like we've seen a frog dissection scene in sitcoms and teen movies a million times before. So I guess, yeah, just makes sense for them to use the frog in this way instead to Yeah, spark off that idea.
I guess as well, you've got to remember, it is still a kids' movie, so you've got to do it in a way that's not going to be overly graphic as well.
Yeah.
And not too complicated either.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then we do start getting really into kind of like the tale of Frankenstein. So Victor goes and takes Sparky's body from the cemetery, takes it home, and then we have this scene where he's kind of stitching him back up together, and there's thunder and lightning outside.
The bit before that though, when he like sneaks in with the dog, and then the dad like looks around, and then obviously you see that he's dragging the dog. I'm like, how could you not smell that? Like, how could you not smell the dead dog? You're just like looking for something. Like, what's wrong with your nose?
I mean, it's a weird town. Maybe everyone has a bad smell.
Maybe.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, the dad's not the smartest, I can assume from earlier conversations.
It kind of, you know what, like, just before we go back onto that, what's like the parents again a little bit. The mum was a bit too passive for me. Like, I felt like there was a really all good opportunity in this film for her to be, like, a really strong character. And I feel like she's a bit passive at times. Don't know how you guys felt about that.
Yeah, she doesn't really have much dialogue in this at all. Like, she could have had, like, a really good relationship with Victor, and there could have been some nice scenes of them together. But yeah, she's kind of, like, a bit of a throwaway character to me. I don't know what you think, Lindsay.
I feel like you could say that about so many of the characters in this film, though.
Yeah.
There's so many characters, I just kind of feel like, what's the point in you? Like, because for me, the
usually
whole
ask
story...
that me.
Savage.
For me, like, the whole story really just revolves around Victor. It's like, Victor is where, like, we learn the lessons of the film through. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, even, like, the dad is, like, kind of pointless in the film as well.
I feel like the only other characters in this film that really do have things to say or do is Toshiaki and Edgar.
Mm.
I feel like everyone else is really disposable.
I would agree with that. I'd say that's pretty fair. But we have this scene where Victor is bringing Sparky back to life. You know, he's stitching him back up. He puts the little kind of screws in the sides of his neck, and Sparky is brought back to life, and he looks so... I was just like, my heart was like, oh, he looks so adorable, and they have this really sweet scene together. And then we have this like really, really nice scene afterwards where, I know I hadn't mentioned it earlier, but Elsa, who's the mayor's niece, her dog, it's kind of like Sparky's girlfriend, and they meet each other again outside, and they have this like spark as they like boop noses or something, and she gets like a little white streak in her hair, so she's like Bride of Frankenstein. I thought that was really nice.
I love that. Yeah, that was such a good touch.
That was, I was full on Leonardo DiCaprio memeing it, just being like, at that point. Before that, one of the other sort of lol moments I had in this movie was when Sparky wagged his own tail off.
Oh yeah.
I did enjoy that.
That was so cute. Like, you just see the little tail going, oh yeah. And there's the bit as well where his like ear falls off. There's a lot of kind of slapstick comedy with Sparky, which I like.
Oh yeah, he just drinks water and it like pops out his back. It's just so stupid.
Oh, his wee scars. He's so cute.
Bless him. Yep, so we have those scenes, and then we have a couple other scenes where Sparky's walking about the town and stuff like that, but at this point Edgar has kind of sussed out what's happened, that Victor has brought his dog back to life. So he goes to the house and he's like, I know what you did, and prick. I want to know how you did it. Yeah, exactly. He's just a wee prick, and he goes and gets a dead goldfish and kind of forces Victor to recreate the experiment, creating an invisible goldfish.
We never find out what happens to the goldfish.
Oh,
no,
yeah.
That's true.
That's another thing that I actually didn't even pick up on until right now, and I was like, what actually happened to the goldfish? Yeah, he creates this like invisible goldfish. The experiment doesn't go the same way And, you know, we're sort of led to believe later in the film that it's because he doesn't really have his heart in the second experiment, whereas he had, like, his heart in the first experiment. And I don't know. I don't know if I'm really on board with that, to be honest with you. Like, I feel like that's a pretty weak excuse for why the experiment went very differently.
How much lightning is in this town as well? Because this experiment is performed a few times in the film and it all relies on there being lightning.
Like, didn't someone say at some point, like, it's always storming here?
I don't know.
This forks in Twilight where it's always raining, like, just constant bad weather.
It's in Aberdeen.
I mean, fair. But yeah, we get that scene, and then kind of off at the same time, we're getting a couple scenes with Bob and Toshiaki, where they're working on their own science experiment for the science fair. And what do you guys think of these scenes?
I mean, problematic character aside, like, we there's no point in continuing to go on and on about that. Like, we've discussed it. Like, he's very problematic. Taking that out of the equation, these are okay filler scenes. Like, mm-hmm. him sort of trying to make their own jetpack with Coke and Mentos that you use. And, you know, that's funny. And, you know, him slowly making his way towards the edge of the roof. So, yeah, like, I don't hate them, but... It's starting to drag for me a little bit at this point. Like, I don't know how you guys feel at this point of the movie, but I'm starting to be like, right, come on, let's start wrapping this up. I feel like that first portion takes way too long, because the whole point of the movie is Frankenweenie. It's him as a reanimated dog, and I feel like it takes way too long to get to the point where he's actually reanimated.
Yeah, no, that's fair. The pacing does get a little bit slow in the middle. Lindsay, what do you think of these scenes before we get on to the PTA meeting?
I guess I don't mind them quite so much. Like, I guess there is some attempt to try and bring some life to these characters. Like, whether it's successful or not, it's a different story. But I think kids would probably find that scene hilarious. That's probably who it was made for.
That's fair.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I have the humour of a child, so I find it kind of funny.
It's going to be tens across the board for Lucy.
And then we get this PTA meeting, right, where the parents get so overdramatic over this science experiment. And can I just say before we get into it, I love that the science teacher gets up on the stage and pretty much tells all these people that, like, you're hick folk, you are so fucking stupid, you probably think the earth is flat, and just, like, get a grip of yourselves, hen.
Oh yeah, he reads them all before he is exited.
The library is well and truly open when he comes in. No, but, like, this townsfolk, and it's all led by the mayor. Like, the mayor is the one who's sort of whipping them all up into a frenzy, isn't he? And it's all pretty much just because he doesn't like Victor and Sparky, because he pisses on his flowers. And that's really it. Like, that's all we're really known. This mayor is so one-dimensional throughout the entire movie, and I get that it's a kids film, so you're not going to be getting proper, really deep sort of character, but we've seen kids films where we do get that, or we get something close to that. This mayor is so one note, and it's just so ridiculous. And I think I hate this movie, this part of the movie, so much, because I actually think it's relatively close, and I'm trying not to offend some of our American listeners, but I actually feel like this is what it's probably like in a lot of sort of small American towns, even to this day. I mean, we did talk about it a lot when we did Elvira, about that whole sort of small town mentality, and, you know, things. And over the course of the past sort of month, you know, we've went quite in depth, specifically, I think, in the Teeth episode as well, about, you know, what kids are taught in school, what they're not taught in school. And these are obviously themes that are getting brought up here. And I think the reason that it's annoying me so much is because it's actually quite true, obviously fantastical in this world, but quite true to life.
Yeah, like, it's really unfortunate. And I think, to a certain extent, like, people get a bit insecure about maybe their own intelligence. So if their kid is like, oh, we learned this, and they're just like, no, that's not the case. I was never told that. I don't agree with that. And it's this idea of their kids knowing more than them freaks them out, maybe more than the actual information does. And that's just fucked up because things change all the time. Like, think about, like, in our lifetimes, like, how much, like, medical advancements have been made, how many different changes in science that there have been. And, like, at the end of the day, it's not that big a deal. Like, we find out new things all the time. It doesn't mean people have to shit the bed about it, but they do.
Exactly. Knowledge is power. And I think it's more that you're right. It's more that the parents are too, they have too much pride in the fact that they think they know everything and their kids can't know more than them. And if they don't know, it's the fear of the unknown and they don't like the idea of not knowing. So yeah, I was getting so frustrated at this scene. I just had my hand in my palms and I'm like, oh, thank God I'm not a parent and I have to deal with this shit. I mean, I don't like kids anyway to begin with. I just couldn't be done with these folks. But after this scene, the PTA scene, Victor's parents go back home and they find Sparky and they're obviously freaking out because they assumed that, you know, Sparky was dead. And the dad kind of makes comments like, doesn't say play God, but he's essentially saying you can't play God, you can't, you know, play with life and death. And Sparky's obviously freaking out and runs away. I know, poor Sparky. And it's the little noises he makes as well, the little, like, I'm not going to impersonate, but you know, like, little
I thought you were going to there. I was waiting for it. I was like, oh, no, here we go.
No,
this is another scene
that
I was about
grieving,
because I'm like, Malone is so scared.
This is the one of the points, like, where I think that this is probably where the dad really sort of redeems himself, doesn't he? Because, you know, he does start off by giving it the whole you can't play with life and death, you can't play God, and you know what, he's probably like, that's not an unreasonable thing to sort of be saying to someone who's brought someone back. That's a legitimate argument, you know, when you're talking about bringing people back from the dead. And then they very quickly, both the parents just sort of agree to go along with it, don't they? And I feel like that's a bit of a redemption arc, at least for the dad. The mum's, like we said, she doesn't really do anything offensive at any point in this movie, but I think it's a little bit of a redemption arc for the dad.
Yeah, it's nice that, you know, they realise, like, they obviously also care for the dog as well, or at least I'd like to think they care for Sparky. And they all go out looking for Sparky. Bless him when he goes and sleeps on his grave at the hill I was near Greeting. I was like, oh, it reminded me of like Greyfriars Bobby. I don't know about you, but I was near Greeting at that.
He's so cute.
And then whilst this is happening, Toshiaki, Edgar and Bob, they invade Victor's lab and they discover kind of how he reanimates the animals.
Can I just sorry to interrupt you there, but there is another friend and he's sort of like this Lurch character. Did we ever find out what his actual name is?
Oh, because he looks like actual Frankenstein.
Yeah, that's what confused me. That's what was confusing me about his character, because I felt like he could have been like Frankenstein's monster. But we never actually find out what his... Do we find out what his name is? I can't remember.
It must be named, because he has lines and everything.
He's quite a... Again, he's probably, you know, he's one of the sort of more important... Is he more important? I don't know. But like you said, he's a prominent member of that sort of group.
That goes to show... I can't remember the name of that character at all.
I don't even have it in my notes.
No, neither do I. But you're right, there is another friend. And they start deciding to reanimate their own pets. You know, there's a turtle. Shelly turtle. I think there's sea monkeys as well.
There's a turtle. There's sea monkeys. There's Colossus, who I think is a wee gerbil.
Yeah, or a hamster.
Along those lines, or a guinea pig or something.
That was another thing that got me about Toshiashi's character, because what does Shelly resemble when she's reanimated?
Godzilla.
Godzilla. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, Did you really have to be like a Japanese character as well?
It's so on the nose, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very so on much the nose. So.
You've also like Edgar has a wee rat that he picks, yeah. And then you've got Mr. Whiskers as well.
Mr. Whiskers, yeah, which that's probably one of my favorite scenes, just turning into this little bat cat hybrid.
Did anyone else get very Gremlins vibes off the sea monkeys?
Yeah.
You know, I felt like it was very, I don't know if there was sort of, because it was the popcorn as well, because is it in the first, I can't remember if it's the first or second one, there is that scene in Gremlins in the cinema where they're all sort of eating popcorn and things like that. So I wonder if that was sort of like a direct reference to that.
I'm sure it is, because there's so many references in this to horror movie monsters. An iconic character, so I'm pretty sure. Yeah, you're right. There is that popcorn scene. So I think it probably is. And then we have the parents are still looking for Sparky. Then there's also this like fair that's going on at the town randomly as well.
And he's so scared at the fair as well. Like,
oh no. How do you handle it?
You're getting very emotional, Lindsay. We also like get the mayor being a total dick at this point to his niece as well.
Yeah, because she's like crowned the Dutch queen or something like that, and
she's wearing a hat of candles, which you know, danger. Like,
oh, you know what? That's the other thing that really bugged me about him. Sorry, just to take it back a little bit. I think Pebbles is having a meltdown. You see, it was back at the PTA meeting as well when you know they're like, "Oh, give the teacher a chance," and he's like, "Yeah, come up here, Mr. Menace," and he's like, "Shut it, you dick!" Like, honestly, what a prick.
Oh my god, yeah, definitely.
Definitely. But doesn't Elsa say something snarky as well whilst the mic is on as well? So she gives it back to him as well. I can't remember what she says.
She's like, oh, I wish I was dead or something, or death would be a pleasure or something like that.
Yeah, which is very like Wednesday Addams kind of vibes. I like that. And she has her little sing-song as well, which was quite cute. But then after this, things start really kicking off. So Mary the Turtle, who's now turned into essentially Godzilla, shows up and starts messing about in the fair. And Elsa goes missing as well. And then immediately, this fucking mayor assumes, well, when they see Spark and they see Victor, he assumes it's because of them. And then we get this classic Frankenstein scene where everybody's got pitchforks and they're chasing Sparky and Victor. What did you guys think of these scenes?
It's they've paid good homage here to original Frankenstein. Obviously you've got the big windmill finish that we'll get to as well. But yeah, it's just it's more like I don't know, I kind of like, I was definitely rooting for all of the animals, particularly Shelley. I don't know. I get the problematic aspect of it being, you know, Godzilla and Toshiaki's character and things like that. But I just wanted Shelley to crush all the bastards. I was like, go on, do it. But then Shelley also kills Colossus. So I was like, oh.
Lindsay, what did you think?
I just think at this point I was just like, what the fuck is this guy's problem? Like, he gets the whole town to chase a little boy to a windmill that he then sets on fucking fire. Like, are you okay? Like, at what point do you become self-aware to realize that you might be the problem?
I do think they were smart in that they made him set it on fire by mistake.
Yeah,
I think that was a very, very important distinction, because like I say, it's still a kid's film, and I think it's very important that they made that distinction that you didn't set it on fire on purpose.
That's true, because that could have been very sinister real quick. But yeah, they run up to this windmill and Elsa's inside with, and I forgot the pooch's name.
Persephone,
yes. Stuck in there with Persephone, and then Whiskers, who is now this evil little demon menace, is in there and they're having this fight, and Sparky is trying to go in to save them, and then Victor also jumps in as well, And at that same time, the mayor sets the windmill on fire. So we have this kind of almost like fight scene. And then, you know, Elsa nearly falls and, you know, she's caught by this rope. But poor Victor and Sparky are still inside. And I have a major problem with this scene, right? Oh, Ian's like, oh, what?
It was the finger. It was like,
no.
Finger of doom.
But Whiskers dies in the windmill, gets impaled, which I forgot about this, actually. Even though it was a kids' movie, I was like, oh, I wasn't expecting that.
I think that's that's also a reference to The Omen, because the priest in The Omen gets impaled by a spike, not from a windmill, but from a church. So I think that's a callback to The Omen.
A nice little callback there. But then the windmill starts collapsing on itself and it's still on fire. None of them go in and try to save the dog.
Well, you know what? Like this is funny. Like, no one stopped Victor from running into the windmill, but everyone stopped Victor's dad. What the fuck?
Yeah, that's a fair point. He's like, my son's in there, but they're still like, no, stay back. Like,
I was like, surprised.
Yeah, we don't like your child. We want him to die of either fire or smoke inhalation.
Or by cat bat.
Yeah.
I was surprised that we got to see the Mr. Whiskers impaled. I thought, I know, obviously, you know, we can't protect kids from everything, but I was a little bit surprised that we saw that. Like, I don't know if you guys were was as surprised as I was.
Yeah, like... Well, like Lucy had said as well, like, it's a lot. It's quite a gruesome death for a kids' film. But then, you don't really see anything.
There's no blood
or anything, and... or some, like, dramatic death.
Yeah, I know. It just sort of took me aback, because I felt like, I mean, the themes of the film that we're dealing with, but I just felt like it was a little bit more than the rest of the film. But I guess it's your finale, so maybe it kind of has to be.
Yeah, I think they had it at the end for shock value. I say shock value, but for a kid, you know, that'll be a very like, oh my God, you know, kind of thing. But they don't even try and go back in to save Sparky. They wait till it's all burnt down. I'm sorry, but if one of my cats was in a burning building, I don't care. I'm going to fight tooth and comb to get them out.
But they know they can resurrect him. So let him fucking burn.
Burn, baby, burn.
Savage.
But yeah, we have, so the windmill eventually stops being up in flames and it's all kind of calmed down. So they go to get Sparky, and then yeah, they come up with this innovative idea to try and bring him back to life, and they all hook up Sparky to all the cars. I know that's not, I'm also not a car person. If you haven't already deciphered, I'm not a sports person and I'm not a car person.
I think they hook up all the car batteries to Sparky. And then
that's what it is.
Then start revving the cars and putting electricity through them that way.
Yes. And they're not sure if it's going to bring him back to life. And then there's this like really sweet scene with Victor and Sparky. And Victor says, you don't have to come back. You'll always be in my heart. And I couldn't.
That was a very... Well, sorry.
Well, this was one of the parts of the film that I was like, oh, this is really good. And it doesn't actually really matter if Sparky comes back, because obviously that line is a callback to earlier where the mum says to him, you know, Sparky's always going to be in your heart. And Victor doesn't understand, because one of the main... plot lines of this is grief and how to deal with it, and it is actually a really important lesson for children to learn, how to deal with grief and negative emotions in general. And for a lot of kids, a pet is going to be the first way that they learn how to deal with that. So I did like this, and then they brought him back.
Yeah,
and I'm
totally on board with you. Like, not to sound really morbid, but they shouldn't. Sparky should be dead.
Yeah.
Like, because it did kind of. It kind of ruins the whole sort of point of this movie, doesn't it? Like, he still ends up with his dog at the end of the day. And, you know, the story of Frankenstein is an incredibly, incredibly tragic story. It's, like, so tragic. And I get that you can only do so much with a kids' film, blah, blah, blah. But I mean, we've all seen fucking kids' films that have got some stuff in it and endings, and you're like, oh, that was a bit much for me when I was 8 years old or whatever. So I don't think that, you know, Sparky not being resurrected would have been that shocking, to be honest with you. Like, I feel like it was would have made this movie end on a much more poignant note than it does.
Definitely. I'm in complete agreement with both of you. So, I mean, at the end, Sparky is revived, and they have this like cute little scene where, you know, he has a little kind of kiss with his little dog girlfriend, and that's kind of the end credits. But I think, as much as I love Sparky, I think it should have ended with him not coming back, because like, even though it is a kids' movie, it should still teach us a lesson. Because at the start, you are right, I'm in agreement with what you said, Lindsay. It's talking about grief, and one of the first griefs we have is pets. It's, you know, that's kids usually their first experience of it. And there has been other movies that we've even reviewed that kids would watch that have really good lessons in it, like Adam's Family, you know, being yourself and having good communication with your family. Even like as problematic as Tim Burton is, there are other movies he has where there is maybe you could say some lessons, because we do have the discussions of grief in like Corpse Bride, you know, Nightmare Before Christmas. You could say there's also kind of some lessons in there, don't judge a book by its cover, all these kinds of things. But this, it just kind of takes away what is supposed to be the focal point of the movie. I feel like they could have ended it with that line that Victor says, and then had the science teacher back as well. And maybe if they wanted to end it in a happy-ish kind of way, it could have been maybe Victor making friends with Elsa, and like they could be back in the classroom or something. It doesn't have to be a really, really sad note, but I feel like, yeah, I'm in a great, it just kind of ruins it for me. Honestly.
Speaking about like kids' themes as well, should we discuss the fact that Persephone is clearly a dog that's into necrophilia? Or was that a conversation for another episode?
I hadn't thought about it. My mind hadn't gone there, but I mean, fair.
That would have been a hell of a way to end this movie. Indeed. Don't shake your head at me, Lindsay.
That is kind of the end of the movie. I know we've talked about aesthetic. I mean, I've got some trivia about how this was made, because making a stop motion movie is incredibly difficult. It takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of patience. I think the score in this is really good as well. But is there anything else that we haven't touched on yet that you guys want to speak about?
One of the things I've just kind of actually been thinking about it through this episode. So obviously there's this whole thing about science and learning throughout the film. And maybe it wasn't a conversation in 2012, but I feel like I hopefully think that if it was made now, I would hope that Victor would be a Victoria, because there definitely should be a bit more work in encouraging girls to do STEM-type jobs and pursue like STEM hobbies. So yeah, I feel like maybe they could have done something there by making Victor a Victoria.
I think as well, like, it wouldn't have been so bad in this film as well if either of the two girl characters were sort of trying to come up with science projects, but neither of them were in this film. It was the boys. It was all the boys.
Yeah.
So, I don't think it would have been that bad if you at least had them doing, you know, part of that sort of middle section of the movie where you were sort of having this montage of everyone trying out their science projects, but we didn't even get them doing that. So, yeah, I feel like that's...
It's like, even if you change Victor's gender as well, like, you literally don't have to change anything else in the film. And you could have had the exact same film. But, yeah, it's just with the big, like, science message type thing in it as well. Yeah, I do think we probably would have been better if we had a girl instead of a boy, because there's enough male representation in science, to be honest.
Very true. I hadn't thought of that before, but you're right. Changing Victor to Victoria literally changes nothing about this movie. And like you say, a lot of the characters in this don't have much depth, but especially the female characters. I mean, I love Weird Girl, right? I mean, I have Weird Girl tattooed on me. But she's there for kind of comic relief. Elsa, I think, could be a really great character in terms of showing that she's smart, she's independent, she could get in, you know, have her own science project. We don't get that. And the mum, we can only assume is a stay-at-home mum. I don't know if that's the case, but we don't really get any depth from her at all. The female characters in this are pretty quiet, to be honest. They're not really given much of a voice. So yeah. I'm in agreement with that.
I think as
that.
Well for me is because Elsa is a Van Helsing as well, which is another sort of famous horror story, you know, werewolves and vampires and things like that. So you really could have done something with that as well, because she is a Van Helsing. So that was a bit of a letdown. That was something that I felt it was just very throwaway. Listen, like, this film, and I agree with what you said, Lucy, like, we didn't really talk about it much, but the score for this film's great. I love it. Like, the aesthetic of this film is great. I love it. I love the fact that everyone's got just bags under their eyes. It's how I feel 24/7. but yeah, there's all these references to great and paying homages to other horror movies, but so much of it is just very throwaway. And I feel like there's a lot of good ideas in this film, and I just don't think they run with enough of them. I think they're very, very focused on this sort of one track. And again, I get that it's kids. You don't want too much going on. You know, you don't want, like, but, you know, like, these, they're not putting these references in there for kids. Kids aren't going to get all of these references. So they're there for the adults, you know? And I feel like it's just like a brief moment of going, oh, look, that's Gremlins, or, oh, that's the Omen. But then it's gone, it's done. And I needed something that just had a bit more of a lasting impression for me.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Because a lot of the references in this, they're quick. If you aren't really paying attention, you're going to miss it. I get that. Is there anything else you want to speak about before we go on to trivia?
Not really. I was just, I just find it quite funny as well, because we've obviously talked about the length of this movie, and I'm sitting here saying, oh, well, I felt like it was really dragging. That's quite something for a film that's only, 75 to 80 minutes long, to be feeling like it's dragging, you know?
Yeah. No, that's true. That is, yeah.
I feel like I'm ripping your heart out here, Lucy.
I do love this movie, right? But I know there is problems in it. But visually, this is one of my favorites that Tim Burton's had. But I would say with any Tim Burton movie, you have to take it with a grain of salt, you know? Right, in that case then, we'll go into the trivia. I want to start off with the budget, because this movie was hella fucking expensive to make. The budget for this was $39 million.
Wow, that's mad. That's so, so mad. Like, how many episodes have we done where a horror movie has had that budget? None. I would wager none.
I mean, that's like Marvel Cinema Universe level budgets for some movies, you know. It is a lot. I understand that the production on this probably does cost a lot more because of how it's filmed, but that kind of shocked me. It did make a profit, though. It grossed 81.5 million at the box office, so it did do well. It doubled its money, but I did not expect it to cost that much. That was a bit of a shocker for me.
But it obviously, like you say, good return on its interest, more than doubled its budget. I don't think, as a filmmaker, you can really ask for much more than that. It's very, very rare you get one of these sort of, you know, Saw movies or Paranormal Activities where you make a movie for peanuts, but it goes on to make hundreds of millions of pounds and dollars. You know, this movie's been made for, like you say, a hell of a lot of money, but to more than double its budget, I think is pretty good going.
Definitely. And I know we've spoken already about all the references in this movie, but there's quite a lot of trivia for this, and there's actually a couple of fan theories as well. So one of the theories is that, so the film release spawned a fan theory that with Burton's two other stop motion animated films, Nightmare Before Christmas, which was produced in 93, and Corpse Bride in 2005, there's this theory that they all take place within the same universe. That Victor Frankenstein and Sparky are descendants of Victor Dort and Scratts from Corpse Bride, and then Zero from Nightmare Before Christmas, which I could kind of see that. I don't know if you guys could, but
I did get very Zero vibes from Sparky, so I could definitely see that.
And Victor in Frankenweenie does look very much like the lead male character in Corpse Ride, whose name has completely escaped my memory, but yeah.
His name's also Victor.
I thought it was, and I didn't want to say it.
And actually, in the Pet Cemetery, there is a grave for Zero. Yeah.
Oh, is there?
I
didn't see that. I was kind of hoping, I know it's not like Tim Burton, I was kind of hoping they'd spell Pet Cemetery wrong so that it was a reference to Stephen King. I was so wanting Pet Cemetery to be spelled incorrectly, but... It wasn't.
I noticed that as well. I was like, you could have just changed one letter, and it would have worked. But yeah. I don't know if you guys are aware of this, but this movie is based on another movie that Tim Burton made. He actually made Frankenweenie in 1984. It was a live action version. It was one of the first movies he made, and it's based on his real life dog. I've seen clips of the original, but I've not seen the full original, but this is a remake
it's
of
a
one
short,
of his first
isn't it?
Movies.
Isn't it a short?
Yeah, it's a short. It's not like a full length feature. Yeah. I think it's like his first movie he ever made.
I've not seen one it. Of his earlys. It would be very interesting to go back and see how it sort of evolved, like you say, from the mid-80s to the early teens. So it would be an interesting watch.
We've already gone through quite a lot of the references, but this film does reunite Winona Ryder and Catherine O'Hara. The last time they'd worked together was on Beetlejuice in 1988, so I thought it was nice for them to come together again after 20-odd years. Two absolute legends. Winona Ryder actually did her own singing in this, and she agreed to it because Tim Burton said that he wanted the singing to sound imperfect. That's a little bit shady, but...
What a dick.
But she did do her own singing when it was the... When
I thought
she
her singing was
Dutch
fine.
Queen. I know. I thought it was all right, but yeah. Shady.
If I'd gotten up there, then he'd have had something to... There have been some imperfections in there.
Well, I was going to say, but we know my singing is trash as well. I sound like a dying dog, but I don't care. I give the full fantasy. There is a lot of trivia in this about how this was made as a stop motion. There was a documentary that came out, I think, last year. There has been a lot of documentaries about Nightmare Before Christmas and how that was made, the same kind of way this was. But just a couple of little facts. There are 24 frames per second in Frankenweenie. So this means that the animators had to stop and position the puppets 24 times in order to create 1 second of filmed action in this movie. So this movie took a really long time to produce because it was constantly making tiny little tweaks to the puppets, because it's all puppets, to make this. So well done to the animators, because that sounds like the job from hell, in my opinion.
Yeah, no thanks.
One of the executive producers on Frankenweenie, Don Hahn, said that stop motion is a very time consuming process. He said in a good week each animator produced about 5 seconds of film.
I remember, not about this, but I remember ages ago watching a documentary about how they made Toy Story, the first Toy Story, because obviously Pixar animation was very different back then in the mid-90s than it is now. And they would say, they were the same. They would say, like, you'd spend a whole day of filming just to film, like, 1 or 2 seconds worth of the movie, you know? And it's just absolutely crazy.
It's mad. It's a labor of love for sure. That's kind of all the trivia I had out with the references. I know sometimes you guys like to look at trivia yourself. Is there anything that you guys wanted to share? Or
the only thing I just quickly looked up now, more just out of curiosity, because obviously you were talking about Nightmare Before Christmas there, so I wanted to look up how much that movie cost. Mm-hmm. In comparison, because what did you say this one was? 31 million.
39 million.
So obviously Nightmare Before Christmas came out in 1993, and it also, especially for the time, had a massive budget. It was $18 million, which in 1993 is a huge budget. And it made a very similar amount of money to this. It made 91.5, so That's obviously like its limit. It doesn't matter when you make it, how much you make it for. It's going to make 90 odd million. It's fine.
I know this is random, but I'm just thinking how much things like Chicken Run would cost. I'm thinking about all the stop motion movies out there and how expensive they are.
We'll find out when Chicken Run 2 comes out.
Yeah,
that's true. Okay, in that case, we'll go on to the next part of our next segment, which is our ratings. But first off, before we get into the guessing game, we'll go on to what the IMDb rating is, which is 6.9 out of 10, 69, if you will. And the Metacritic rating was 74 out of 100 as well. So, like, relatively positive, like, above average.
That's really high for Metacritic. Metacritic tends to be one of the more, out of all of them, even the Rotten Tomatoes critics, tends to be... possibly the harshest out of all the sort of official critic sites that that we look up. So that is quite high.
It's quite surprising. The critics are actually a fan. But we will go on to our favourite part, which is the guessing game, because we're all a little bit competitive, not looking at you, Ian. You know it's true.
It's me that's not even competing most of the time.
We'll start off with the critics. But we'll start off with you, Ian. What do you think the critics rated Frankenweenie out of 100?
Well, I don't know. I feel like this is another hard one to do because on the one hand, I feel like critics probably have a bit of a hard-on for Tim Burton. But at the same time, I don't feel like this is his best work. I still think they're probably going to have rated this relatively positively, so I'm going to go 75.
75, okay. And Lindsay, what do you think?
I'm going to go 80.
I'm 80. Straight in there. No fucking explanation for your answer or anything.
Well, Lindsay takes it. The critics actually rated this really highly. They rated it 87%.
That's higher than I thought, obviously, because I said 75.
But I'd be interested to have a look how they've rated other Tim Burton movies, because you're right, I think critics hero worship Burton quite a lot. So I was quite surprised it was that high, though, because I do love this movie, but I thought, if you compare it to, like, Edward Scissorhands or Nightmare Before Christmas, Sleepy Hollow, like, I thought, I didn't know if it'd be rated as that high, so I was surprised. But we'll go on to the audience rating. So we'll start off with Lindsay this time. Lindsay, what do you think the audience rated this out of 100?
I'm going to go 65.
Okay. And Ian, what do you think?
I don't know. I think they might have rated it quite highly as well. I'm going to stick to my 75.
And Lindsay, what did you say?
65.
I'm terrible at math. Okay, I don't know which one of you...
It's clearly somewhere in the middle.
The audience rated this 70%.
Oh,
so we're like straight down
it's a draw. It's a tie. That's the first time we've ever had a tie. Wow.
First time for everything.
It is.
So yeah, the audience...
super, super high then.
Yeah, so the audience did rate it pretty high as well. But we will go on to...
So just before you do that, because I've just quickly looked up Edward Scissorhands and Nightmare Before Christmas on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, okay.
So Edward Scissorhands scored 90% from the Rotten Tomatoes critics, 91 from the audience. Nightmare Before Christmas got 91 from the audience again, and 95 from the critics. So
wow, Jesus.
They love Tim Burton.
Bloody hell, they worship the ground he fucking walks on. But we'll be the judge now and give our own ratings. I'm going to start off, Lindsay, what is your rating for Frankenweenie out of 10?
I am going to give this a 7 out of 10. There is a lot of problems with the film, but I think if you take it on the fact that it is a children's film, I think it's really good. I think there's a lot of good lessons in the film for children, because at the end of the day, that's why it was made. And I think it's hard to fault it as a children's film. It's kind of more, you know, we're three grumpy adults, childless adults. So obviously we're going to pick it apart a bit harder than a child or maybe a parent would. But I think at the end of the day, it does what it says on the tin, and I can't really fault it for that.
That's fair. Ian, what about you? What are you going to give this?
So, I don't know. Like, I feel like, if you're sitting there and asking the questions, like, is this a good introduction to horror movie for kids, then I can't sit here and say that it isn't. It is, and it could potentially be a gateway movie to a lot of those classics, especially the Universal monster stuff, like I was saying at the beginning of the episode, Frankenstein, of course. But there is references to The Mummy in here as well. There's reference, of course, to Bride of Frankenstein that we were talking about, and then a whole host of other horror movies as well. Dracula, we've got the Gremlins reference, The Omen, and things like that. So in terms of that, for nods as well, that's really great. We've obviously talked quite a lot about the aesthetic, which is fantastic. The score is really good, but this movie, I don't know, maybe I am just coming at it from a childless human adult perspective, and this film kind of just left me a little bit empty, to be honest with you. Like, that, the fact that they, I feel like they really missed an opportunity with the ending. There's a lot that I feel like could have been wrapped up a little bit nicer, like having the teacher come back, like having some depth to the characters. We've obviously got very problematic characters. There's issues with the female characters. So there's a lot of bad and there's a lot of good. So I'm going to go very down the middle with this and give it 5.
Whatcha? That's quite hot, but no, that's fair. That is fair. I do see where you're coming from.
Lucy's like, 10! 10!
10's across the board. If you had asked me this like a couple of years ago, I would have probably given this like a 9, because I have a lot of nostalgia for this movie. I really do like it. Looking at it now though, being a little bit more critical of it, there is issues with it. I think it's the stereotyping, but my biggest issue as well is the ending. I didn't like the ending, does bother me quite a bit, but I mean, I can't deny that, you know, visually this movie is stunning. It is a love letter to horror in my eyes, a love letter to horror, you know, for kids as well. I think it's a great star movie for kids, but with everything in mind, I'm gonna give this a 7.5.
That half making all the fucking difference there.
I was going to give it an 8, but I'm like, no, I'm going to give it a 7.5, because, you know, the more we speak about it, there is a couple issues with it.
I think that's fair, though, because I feel like there's, you know, you're absolutely justified in especially in your love for it as well. Like, you know, I'm obviously coming at it maybe from my grumpy old man perspective, you know, so maybe I am being a bit harsh on it, but, you know, like I say, I think everyone's reasoning is fair, so.
Yeah, for sure. And also, I have to ask, can I hear Bear snoring in the background?
Oh, yeah.
There's been like 7 times in this episode, and I've been like, that's on the microphone.
We've had all the pets today, because Pebbles has been like climbing curtains.
I don't know if you just heard, but there was a big rat fight about 45 seconds ago. So.
Joys of all the animals. But with all that in mind, what is our average score, Ian?
So our scores, and bearing in mind that our combined score was the lowest out of everything, our scores and the critic scores combined gives Frankenweenie an average score of 7.3 out of 10, which puts it in 37th place out of the now 97 movies we have covered on this podcast. And this is weird. This has been happening quite a lot lately, right? So the two movies that also has a 7.3 score is Midsommar and last week's episode, Martyrs. So it's alongside completely different movies. It's also one place above The Autopsy of Jane Doe and one place below Drag Me to Hell.
I was going to say fair. I suppose it's a little bit of a lighter movie when you put it next to something like those two.
I don't understand. Like, I can't say whether it's in good company or not based off that, to be honest with you.
You're not
I think that's a little high for my liking, but that's probably more just down to my personal taste over anything else.
To be fair, the critics rate this really high in comparison to what we usually usually review in comparison. I'd say that's fair, right?
Yeah, I would say so. I think the critics have gone a little bit OTT with this, but that's their prerogative.
I do sometimes think, like, when we're talking about these films, like, maybe when it came out, maybe we all would have rated it higher, but then it's like, in hindsight, there's some things that are really problematic about the film, and it's like, should these ratings really stick? Like, should we revisit ratings on films later on when you see something, you're like, actually, that is not a good look.
It's a good point you bring up, because we will be revisiting some of our very early episodes at some point and altering our ratings as well. So even in that short, I think it's a good point to raise, because I think sometimes, you know, we've all done it where we've seen something in the cinema and you thought, oh, that was fucking shit. And then you've given it a second chance at home and you're like, actually, that's no bad. And vice versa, you know, we've all done it. So I think ratings should be revisited. Not all the time, obviously, because who's got fucking time for that? But exactly. every once in a while, give a wee revisit to a few ratings. I already know some of those episodes that I did right at the beginning of this podcast life, where I was doing it by myself. I'm fully prepared to change some of my ratings already, you know, and that's a year and a half later. So, I definitely think that's something that should be revisited. I'm sure Lindsay will get me right in shape when we come to do those re-ratings.
No, I just think there's like one or two episodes, I'm like, about 2 weeks later, I was like, why did I rate it that? That was too much or too low. Like, I should have rated it higher or lower. I'm like absolutely itching to change them.
Waiting for the berating, because I remember after recording and releasing it, I got a little bit berated for my It Chapter 1 episode.
just a little bit.
I think there's only two episodes that we've ever done that you've proper had a go at me for afterwards. One of them was It Chapter 1, the other one was Girl on the Third Floor.
Such a bad episode, that's why.
It was not a bad episode, it was fucking episode.
I have to listen to it now and give my thoughts on it.
I wonder if you'll agree with me. I don't think I've ever actually told Ian why it annoyed me so much, but I wonder if you'll agree with me, Lucy, if you listen to it.
Well, we'll see. But let's go on to our listener
things. Like, can we get back to the fucking episode?
Second listening to these bitches.
I feel bad for folk. We've had some really long episodes lately, and I'm kind of like, yeah.
I know Ian's like, oh, can we put the episodes down a bit? Talks incessantly.
Listen, 2.5 hours. I'm also the one though who can see the timer, so I can see that we've got time to spare. Okay.
All right. For dramatic effect. Oh, I've shown you guys the spell. Do for the listeners. There we go.
That was a good one as well. That was a good one.
That was a good one.
It's so satisfying. I've got this rainbow fan now, guys. It's a redemption on my Twitch. Little plug there. If you want to hear me spill the tea, you can do that on Twitch. But let's get back into this. And let's get our listener opinions and see what everybody else had to say about Frank and Weenie. Glow Lockgear said, I love this film for a variety of reasons. The first being, it's a great introduction to horror for the younger fan base. Yet, not only is it a conduit to horror, but it has a visceral show of empathy and the depths you go for those you love. Which I'm kind of in agreement with. I mean, the love that Victor has for Sparky, like, it's the biggest kind of part of this movie, really, isn't it? Like we said, the main part of this is Victor.
The whole film rests on it, to be honest. Like,
yeah. Definitely. Joe Craig says, it's one of the films I'm using for a gateway into horror for my boys. This guy here loves Sparky. And he had, like, a little photo of his kid watching the movie, aww, which is very sweet. We love to see that.
That's the thing, though. It is a good gateway horror movie, you know, like, we've obviously picked it apart for some of the problematic elements to it, but if you take those things aside, it is a good gateway horror movie.
Definitely. He said that so far, his horror, meaning his son, has consisted of The Nightmare Before Christmas, Frankenweenie, Hocus Pocus, Universal Monster Movies, Night of the Living Dead, and a few shots of Return of the Living Dead.
Hell. Clearly easing him in there. Fucking stan for Hocus Pocus. A Bette Midler stan here as well.
Oh yeah, we stan. We stan for sure.
Always.
And then What an Odd Cast said, it's a child's version of Frankenstein filtered through a Tim Burton style lens. Pretty fair. I didn't like it as much as others before it, but it was entertaining, though it seems to fly under the radar when discussing claymation style look movies, even without the clay the modeling mimics, which I think is fair. I mean, like, we've said this quite a lot already, that if you look at this from an aesthetic point of view, you can't really fault it.
Yeah, and I think
I definitely agree with that comment as well, in that it definitely gets left out of the claymation conversation, because I think it just doesn't.
Bear us some opinions,
because it really looks so polished that it just does not look like claymation at all.
Yeah, I was just actually, Lindsay just stole the words right out from my mouth, because it does get, okay, it does get completely forgotten about when you're having conversations about these styles of movies, and which is bizarre, because it's possibly the best example out there.
Yeah, definitely.
Definitely. Well, I think that's everything for us before we start doing the final plugs. Is there anything you guys want to bring up before we get to that? Or is that us?
No, I have nothing else to say for once.
You sure?
Just can't stop laughing at fucking Doug Snowden. It's so embarrassing.
Lesson.
I know. He's probably boy, like,
bitch, I have to listen to you snore all fucking night.
True.
Lindsay, where can people find you on the socials? And please, can you put up some photos of Bear so the listeners can see his beautiful wee face?
I'm at @HiItsLindsay_ on all social media.
And Ian, what about you?
Find me on Twitter @IanForrest12 with 2 R's.
Nice. And if you want to follow me, you can follow me on Twitter and Twitch @Lulu_Pew. If you want to follow the podcast on all the socials, because we are pretty much everywhere on all the social media, you can find us on Twitter @ScreamsBehind. Facebook and Instagram is Behind the Screams Podcast. Patreon is patreon.com/behindthescreams, and we'll give a shout out to our amazing Patreon subscribers. Thank you so much for supporting us. We appreciate you more than you know. Thank you to Graham B, Lorna Pearl, Nico, GTS Podcast, Coyote Wildfire, TGIF Podcast, Galileo, Boomer, Sophie H, Claire Lusher, Carrie J, Slayway Radio, Leah Lee Brash, and our new subscriber as well, Justin Wurtenberger. Thank you guys so much for all the support. You keep us going, and it's much appreciated.
You pay the bills.
You literally do.
Give us more.
You can also find the podcast on Twitch, twitch.tv/behindthescreamspodcast, where we stream 4 nights a week. Ian streams 3 nights a week, and Dave does Spooky Saturdays. We're also doing a live stream on the 24th?
Yeah, it's the final Saturday of the month. We obviously do a live episode the last Saturday of each month. We're going to be doing this month a live Q&A episode. Pretty much ask us anything. We've already got a lot of very interesting questions lined up from some of our listeners.
I'm excited.
Some that are horror-related, some that are not horror-related. And obviously, we'll be taking questions from people in the chat during the episode as well, but we've got a good chunk of questions. I think we've got sort of 15-16 to get through already, so between the lot of us, I think that's going to take up a good chunk of time, but we'll also try and get through as many chat questions as we can as well, and people can obviously still send us questions right up until the Saturday. Obviously, by the time this episode's released, that'll be this Saturday as well, so you've got just a few days left to get your questions in to us. But you can do that on all our social medias. I've been reposting my little funky graphic for it. I'll be reposting that every day up until before that episode. It'll go into our stories, and I'll put a few more tweets out about it. So yeah, a few more days, get any questions you've got in, because we're taking all questions on any subject, but Of course, we've reserved the right to not answer really bad questions.
within reason, we're not going to spill our entire life stories.
Absolutely. But you know, there's some fun questions. It's going to be a good show.
I have seen some interesting ones that I'm excited to get into. But guys, also as well, like, if you can't make the live stream, there is VODs on Twitch as well. I think they last for about 30 days or something along those lines. So if you can't make it, you can watch it on demand on the Twitch channel
and
as well.
I'll also be, after those 30 days expire, we'll be, especially the live sort of chat shows that we do, we'll be posting them eventually to YouTube. So
yeah, so keep an eye out for that. And next week on the show, so this was my choice, Frank and Weenie. I probably should have said that at the start.
I think everyone knows you're hosting.
yeah. No shit, Sherlock. Okay, I'm saying that to myself. But next week is Lindsay's choice, and we're doing another kid movie. We're going with a theme, and it's going to be Hotel Transylvania. Do you want to tell the people about your choice and why you chose it?
I've actually not revisited Hotel Transylvania for a while, but I just remember watching it and thinking it was loads of fun. It's a bit different from stuff that we've done on the podcast before, so I'm quite looking forward to it.
Before then, as well, sorry, just to shout it out, this Sunday, Sophie is back on the podcast and we're talking about Lake Placid, so check that out as well.
Ooh, yes, please go check out our Sunday bonus episodes as well.
Yes, Nico was back last weekend for the first time in a long time on the main show. We were talking about the Midnight Meat Train with the most bizarre fucking cast known to man. Benny Jones, Bradley Cooper, Leslie Bibb.
I need to watch this film because it's just like, how are all these people in the same film?
Ted Raimi's in this film. And it's a bizarre cast. It's all right though. So go check that out.
Yeah, go check that out. I think that's everything, isn't it, for us, guys? So thank you so much for listening, and we will catch you next time on Behind the Screams.